Welcome, everyone. The chair calls the Education Finance Committee to order for Tuesday, March 25th, 2025. We have a quorum present. We do have a quorum present. And with that, Representative Hill or Representative Johnson, have you had a chance to approve the minutes or review the minutes?
I have, Chair, and move approval.
And Representative Johnson moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Members, we have five bills in front of us. I don't think we'll have a problem with time, but I shouldn't say that because you never know. And we'll take those in any order, but Representative Dotseth, we're going to bring you up for the first two. So House File 827, the Consolidation Transition. So this is the first bill. The chair will move House File 827 to be laid in front of us to be laid over for possible inclusion at a later date or an omnibus bill. Representative Dotseth, if you want to have your testifiers come up, and then you can begin with your testimony. And I believe Mary Carlson and Laura Nielsen, is that correct? Okay, very good. So members, we have a couple testifiers. I've asked each of them to keep their comments to about 2 to 3 minutes each. Representative Dotseth, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Today I've got a bill in front of you, 827, that actually helps adjust the consolidation for rural community schools that are looking to do mergers. With that said, I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers to allow plenty of time.
Thank you. Ms. Carlson, if you'd state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Mary Carlson. Thank you, Chair. I have the privilege of serving Renshaw School District as the Renshaw Board of Education Chair. I am also the mother of a 7- and 3-year-old, a business owner, and a hobby farmer. I am honored to be here today alongside of Carlton's chair, Laura, and members of our school boards. Renshaw and Carlton surround beautiful Jay Cook State Park, just 30 minutes south of Duluth. Renshaw is a kindergarten through 12th grade school that serves 343 students. Yes, 343 total students. First, I want to thank the committee for hearing from us today and for the inflation-adjusted increase on the per-pupil formula. Despite that inflationary adjustment, districts around the state are facing massive budget cuts. Rural districts serve low-income and farming communities. We are extra susceptible to the rising costs of providing education, declining birth rates, and online educational alternatives that keep students out of our schools. Renshaw, with the forecast that we've been provided by the state, is looking at about a 5% budget cut this year. Carlton is facing approximately a 10% budget cut this year. When you only have one section of each grade, meaning we have one kindergarten class total, we can't cut a kindergarten teacher. That leaves us to cutting electives, such as our career and technical education program, which is frankly something I don't want to have to cut, because that program feeds the manufacturing communities within Carlton County. We also have a part-time superintendent, a shared part-time athletic director, and a single principal for our K-12 school. Seriously, there's nothing left to cut. Looking forward, that means we've got three options. First, we could ask for an operating referendum. Second, we could close our school and send our kids into other districts. Or finally, we could consolidate. First, a referendum. We've tried that repeatedly, and it has failed for many reasons, but the primary reason, in my opinion, is that 44% of our upper students fall under the poverty line. It's just not very realistic in our district. Second, closing the district would mean closing the heartbeat of our community. We do not have a single stoplight in Renshaw. The community is where we gather to celebrate. It's where our residents quite literally seek shelter from storms. And it's where our students find consistent food. Closing our school is not an option. That leaves us with consolidation. Thankfully, we have a partner in Carlton. While our district would still be small, serving approximately 600 students, it would allow both of our communities to keep a school in our communities. Our students already play sports together, so it's time to get our districts aligned. The issue is that consolidations are very expensive and incredibly complicated. Carlton has a building that needs to be sold or demolished. A similar demolition of another school cost about $600,000. Renshaw has classrooms that need to be transitioned from elementary to high school, and there is additional staff time that will be needed in order to transition us from the three schools down to two. So when we started thinking about consolidation, we started doing our research, and we discovered that the consolidation aid has not been updated by the state of Minnesota since 1994. The U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics estimates that education costs have ballooned 333% since then. We aren't asking for that much. Instead, we're asking that we update the file to reflect regular inflation at 212%. The aid would be raised from $200 to $424 per resident pupil unit in the first year of consolidation, and from $100 to $212 for the second year of consolidation. Encouraging schools to consolidate is a great way for the state to ensure that education dollars are going to our students by cutting administrative costs and by eliminating old rundown buildings. Renshaw and Carleton will be able to cut our administrative costs in essentially half, and we'll be able to eliminate one full building. I'm asking that you support House File 827, as doing so supports rural and small schools around the state that need to find a creative path forward. Additionally, I have one further request, seeing that you have an LOR bill in front of you. And that request is, please look out for the micro districts in the state of Minnesota. I don't know how often we get the opportunity to come down and talk to you all. LOR, when we are trained as school district, school board members, is described as the great equalizer for rural and small districts serving low-income communities. Renshaw currently receives zero in LOR aid. Zero. Our district number is 100. It's easy to remember, and I know you get the financial runs. Please keep an eye out on Renshaw and the other districts that are serving well under 1,000 students in the state of Minnesota, because if we don't get this right, you are going to lose schools that are training the next generation of farmers, of skilled workers, and of college students in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony, Ms. Carlson. And with that, Ms. Nielsen, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Laura Nielsen. And I'm going to do my best because I'm just getting over the cold everybody has. So if I fail, Mary is going to take over for me. We're partners in crime. Thank you for allowing us to speak on behalf of House File 827, which will provide an opportunity for to better Carleton and Renshaw School District communities. My name is Laura Nielsen. I'm a 2004 graduate of Carleton. My two stepchildren have graduated from Carleton as well, and I have three young children that are currently attending the elementary school. When I moved home after college, we chose to raise our children in Carleton, and many of my neighbors choose this small district life because of the intangible benefits we receive. My family has been in this district for over 80 years, and I'm proud to now serve as the Carleton School Board Chair. And I'm here to tell you our big story about a small town. Our consolidation story is like a long, intense game of ping pong, Carleton versus Renshaw, where time and time again, a player is just milliseconds from the fateful game point. One district groveling at the other asking for consolidation, both been through multiple failed referendums, one of the highest tax districts in the by population in the state, troubled by continual operation referendum, open enrollment struggles, statutory operating debt, and so much more. But not this time. This is not going to be our story or define our consolidation. Our boards together have taken a stance, and we called a truce to do what is best for our students, no matter who has the upper hand. We are different, things are different, and we're ready to get it done. We are just two of the 285 small rural districts who are victims of educational deficits and facing similar predicaments, but we continue to go barely unnoticed. Big schools are the focus, especially when it comes to education funding plans, which is why we are here. We need your support to change the direction of our financial situation by supporting HF 827, which will provide the needed funding for us to consolidate. At this juncture, the current consolidation funding does not allow our two districts to survive. We need the HF 827 increases for strategic future planning and fostering the next generation
of workforce taxpayers. Minnesota needs our rural school districts to teach the next generations, as Mary talked about, of farmers and skilled workers through our CTE and agricultural programs. Consider our current workforce population of baby boomers. Many of them are actively retiring from manufacturing, farming, and trades. What is actively happening in small rural school districts across Minnesota is just that, the replacement of those workers as best as we can. This funding will allow us to be more creative, innovative, and strategic and change our community's needs. We are fortunate enough to have the opportunity to share our story here today and help get our lives changed. Environment is a factor of success. We all know that. The current facility, case in point, the House of Representatives is getting a new building right across the road because of your current facility situation is not conducive for efficiency and effective collaboration and growth. Our district has experienced the same thing, but we've had multiple failed referendums, no state support for LTFM dollars or facilities, and we continue to serve students in an outdated building with terrible lighting, 100-year-old boiler system, asbestos lurking behind the walls, leaky roofs managed by garbage cans in the middle of our hallways during class, drafty 100-year-old windows, and a freezing classrooms where students are forced to bundle up with blankets, literally with blankets, along with the beautiful gym of ours that is our pride and joy in Carleton that is in constant danger of flooding. It has flooded over 5 times in the past 20 years because of the location and the stormwater infrastructure. Yet, Carleton students keep coming back every day and continue to do amazing things in and outside of our communities. When districts point out there's no place left to cut in the budget, as Mary pointed out, and discuss how they can't keep going like this, it hurts to hear, no matter what the size of the district. Even in our dire situation, we can empathize because ultimately, students suffer. But what I can be angry about is the fact how small rural school districts are in much worse off compared to larger districts and are facing much harsher realities of deficits. When we talk about Carleton School District's skeleton crew, this is a true depiction of our reality. Gone are the CTE programs we once had. Shop classes, no foreign language, no band, thank goodness for Renshaw, and no art. Our district meets the state credit requirements for graduation and is left to be creative to piece together the rest to obtain our local graduation credits. Thankfully, we have a partner in less than 5 miles away with Renshaw School District who has been truly holding steady and been a loyal partner ready to share their strengths to better our community. Not because they're at game point in our horrible game of ping pong, but because they recognize the value of better together and stronger as one. Carleton and Renshaw will never be in this same position with the same amazing group of supportive board members. In this time, in our moment, fighting for our students, it can be done. We are asking the House to come alongside of us to ease the burden of consolidation, not just for our communities, but for all districts preparing to have these hard conversations and be forced to creatively serve students in the strongest way for success. We are going to strive for perfection as our standard, fall short because of our mistakes, we are human, but succeed for every Carleton, Renshaw, and Minnesota student. But without changes to funding, we cannot take this leap of faith. We need to succeed. Please join us in taking our students forward by passing HF 827. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nielsen, for your testimony. And I'm not unfamiliar with it. My first teaching job was in Southwest Minnesota, where we had two school districts that could not consolidate. They paired because of a 1950s basketball game. So I understand, and I say that in jest, but I understand the community, the things that often hinder these. So thank you for both of your testimony. I do want to call out and thank Mr. Dion, and I think you have others that have come up to support the effort. So there's some community engagement, and this bill is being laid over, and hopefully we can get some progress going forward, but I appreciate the testimony. So members, quickly, any questions on this one? We do have another bill to get to. Otherwise, Representative Sensenmayer.
Yeah, I can be quick. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Dotsess, for bringing this. I think my question maybe is more just for follow-up from nonpartisan. You know, I know a little bit about the consolidation conversation that we are having at my large district around consolidating schools, and one thing that we've talked about is kind of this threshold for if you get below a certain number, it makes it really hard to make a school work just in terms of all the staff you need. I'm wondering if there's a similar number for district-wide and how many districts we have across the state might fall beneath that threshold. Anything that you could send out about that in the future, I'd appreciate. Thank you.
And so, Mr. Strom, if you have anything you want to add or follow up, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sensamura, I'll send a list of district sizes around for you, as well as a list of districts that have consolidated. Well, it's not codified anywhere for a number of programs. For many years, a two-section school has essentially been seen as a manageable, absent special circumstances, a manageable size. It would be interesting to hear the two school board members' thoughts about this, but as they mentioned at the beginning, once you get down to a single section, even then it's hard to consolidate a first and second grade classroom together. So I think a two-section school is really sort of how the state has viewed a minimum, even though there's no statutory requirement that a school district not fall below that level.
Representative Sensenmuir, quick follow-up. Are you good?
I got this. Can I answer this one?
Yep. And to the testifier, Ms. Nielsen, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. With the consolidation, we would have two sections of every single grade level. But what we do know is that we have a very large support of the Carleton-Renshaw School District of families that do open enroll out. We have very high open enrollment numbers out that are very dedicated to maybe not returning older students, but definitely our younger families are invested in coming back into our districts. It's not a lack of performance, I would say, based on the community's school. It's just the sheer opportunities that can't be provided with other local districts so close. And I think we will resolve that situation, and we have a pretty strong backing from our community. Our goal would be three sections, and we could potentially even sit at four in some areas if possible.
Very good. Representative Sensenmuir.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I'll just say that I know from the perspective of my school district, I think we should be looking at open enrollment and who it benefits in our state and who it doesn't benefit. And so I appreciate hearing from a different district size, a different part of the state, and hearing about some of the challenges you're having with open enrollment as well. Thank you.
Very good. Chair Yukim, any comments?
No, thank you, okay. Mr. Chair.
And with that, the chair lays over House File 2. 827 for possible inclusion in the omnibus or further consideration. Thank you for your testimony, and thank you, Representative Dotsett. And Representative Dotsett, you have the next bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Hang on a second. Relax. You do have to bring cookies again. No. So the chair brings up House File 1258 for possible inclusion to a later date or a further omnibus bill. Representative Dotsett, two-year bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I get in front of you. I'm Representative Dotsett. I have bill number 1258, which actually again involves mergers of shared services. This involves ICE arenas with school district, allowing them to actually merge services and actually utilize facilities. With that, I believe I have a testifier available online. I'll reserve my time for my testifier, Dr. Carey.
Very good. Much appreciated. Members, we do have one testifier for the bill who's joining us remotely. Dr. Michael Cray, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourselves. And if you can keep your comments to about 2 minutes, that would keep me on schedule.
All right. I am Dr. Michael Cray, superintendent with Cloquet Public Schools. I want to thank representatives for taking the time to hear about our concern today. This should be fairly brief. Right now, Minnesota state law allows for a single school district who operates an ice arena to be able to levy for excess costs of operating that arena across their school district. So, for example, if you're running an arena, you have expenses for operating that arena, you bring in revenues through ticket sales and ice rentals and other things, and the difference between your revenue and your expense, you're able to levy that. Now, if you happen to have a cooperative hockey program, in which case we do. We actually collaborate with ESCO and Carleton, who you just heard from. You are actually not allowed to take advantage of that levy opportunity across a cooperative. So as they were speaking earlier, you know that we're seeing shrinking enrollments across rural Minnesota. That looks to be a pattern that will continue. And in order to be able to continue to operate the effective programs we want for our kids, the ability to sometimes collaborate and work in cooperation with neighbors becomes really important. So essentially what we're asking for is just a slight amendment to the current law, which would allow a cooperative of school districts to come together, create an agreement on how they were going to share those costs across their school districts. So really just a very minor edit to allow us to share in those costs across our programs, and if needed, for everybody to be able to access that additional levy authority.
And thank you, Superintendent Carey, for your testimony. Representative Dodseth, any comments to that before I go to questions?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, I just want to thank you for listening to our bill number 1258. I believe it's, again, showing the importance of actually merging and allowing those opportunities if districts and schools choose to do so.
Very good. Members, any quick questions? Representative Quam, before I go to Chair Joachim for closing comments. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And committee members, Dodge County has multiple schools sharing an ICE facility and teams. In fact, this past season, their girls team won state, and they've got members from multiple different schools. That has been a shining thing for Dodge. Has a lot of small schools, and they wouldn't have these opportunities. I like the idea of districts coming together to offer opportunities and experiences to their students they couldn't have separately. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Appreciate that. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this is a good idea, too. It kind of reminds me of fire service districts, but I was wondering about the details. It just mentions a cooperative agreement, but if you share the levies to then build something and one of the districts wants to remove themselves out of that, will that be written into the cooperative agreement, how that looks, or is the one where the one district would still be on the hook? Or how would that work?
Representative Dodseth, or if Dr. Carey is still, on with Zoom.
Mr. Chair, if you could just repeat the question, I couldn't hear very well.
Chair Joachim?
I'm just wondering, with the cooperative agreement, will something be written in if a district decides to back out of the agreement then and not be in there for the maintenance? Like, what is is there a separation agreement? There's not a lot of details. It just says cooperative agreement in the language.
Representative Dodseth.
Great question, Representative. I'll forward that to my testifier. However, I believe that would be some language that would be put in the agreement that's conducted between the two schools within the district. However, I will turn that over to my testifier for clarification.
Yeah, very
Dr.
quickly,
Carey,
I think.
If you want to elaborate.
Yep, sorry about that for jumping in. I'd say very quickly, we would obviously, if we were ever looking to build anything, in our particular situation, we actually have an arena that's already owned by the city. But we're looking to be able to share in the operation of that to be able to expand our potential tax base should we ever need it for maintenance. So in our case, it's already an existing arena. It wouldn't be, and it's already paid for. It's really just about being able to manage the annual upkeep and the operational costs. Of course, if we would ever choose to build something new in the future, which I think for us is probably a long ways off, we would definitely make sure we have language that would dictate how we would move forward if there were ever a dissolution of the program.
Chair Joachim.
Thank you. And I just noticed, too, in the language, it does say operate and maintain. Maybe just having something fleshed out a little bit in statutory language about a separation agreement or just a little more details. I could see it ending up being kind of messy if folks have a disagreement about the longevity of the ice arena or what somebody wants in the locker room or, so forth.
So with that, I think what I'm hearing, Representative Dodseth, if you could find a little bit of comfort language for Chair Joachim and the committee, that might be helpful if this bill comes up at a possible later time.
Well stated, Representative. I would be happy to work offline and actually come up with some language that would be comfortable to solve that concern that you may have. With that said, as you see that we've got, Mr. Chair, a number of challenges in greater Minnesota as well as the state of Minnesota in our education. We're allowing mergers, and these type of shared facilities are an important matter. With that said, I thank you for considering our bill 1258.
Thank you, Representative Dotseth. With that, the chair lays over House File 1258 for possible inclusion into an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair calls up Representative Allen, House File 2387. And while he's on his way up, the chair will move the bill, House File 2387, in front of the committee for a possible inclusion into a later omnibus bill or at a later date. And you have a couple of testifiers, Representative Allen. Representative Allen, two-year bill, House File 2387, the bill is in front of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you already move it to be late, HF 2387 to be laid over for possible inclusion?
Correct. House File 2387 is in front of the committee. Your bill.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Co-Chair Joachim and distinguished committee. Thank you for taking the opportunity to be able to listen to HF 2387, more commonly known, as people have been calling it, the Got Milk Bill. The Got Milk Bill is a common sense cost savings measure that reduces food waste in schools and protects taxpayer dollars. Right now, current policies for students who bring a lunch from home, who want to take want a milk, to take an entire lunch, even though they don't want it, and this results in a massive amount of food waste and unnecessary spending. My bill simply allows students to take just the milk without being required to take the entire meal just to throw it away. The Minnesota School Nutrition Association just a few weeks ago shared with me the average school lunch in the state of Minnesota costs $4.50, 50 cents of that being the milk. That means that every time a student takes just the milk instead of an unwanted meal, taxpayers are on the hook for about $4. The fiscal note estimates that you should have had in your packets that the bill is going to cost about $4.6 million. But I believe this significantly underestimates the savings potential. For instance, if we just prevent 2,000 meals, just for easy figuring, per day statewide from going straight into the trash, the cost of the saved milk would be about $1,000, while avoiding the meal cost would be about $9,000, a net savings to the taxpayer of closer to $8,000 per day. That's if it was just 2,000 meals. Scaling this out over a full school year, we could be looking at massive savings throughout the state of Minnesota, money that could be used to fill the holes potentially in the school lunch program that we already have. The bill right-sizes the school lunch program, addresses the real needs, and brings fiscal responsibility back into focus. We should not be watching taxpayer dollars go straight into the garbage when we have a clear, simple fix. I urge you to support HF 2387 and cut the waste and save the money and ensure kids are getting the milk that they want.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Allen, and you have a testifier on the list, Beth Geis, is that correct? Superintendent, if you would go ahead and state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
You bet. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Beth Geis, and I'm the superintendent in Kenyon-Wanamingo Public Schools, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I believe this bill has the potential to not only reduce food waste in our schools, but also ensuring that our students receive nutritious meals. In Minnesota, students receive a free breakfast and lunch, a fantastic initiative, but one that has led to one very small, unintended consequence. This bill presents common sense solution and that can address some of these issues while also saving taxpayers what we estimate could be millions of dollars. Currently, we have many students that bring their own lunches from home. That's not because we don't serve amazing lunches. Believe me, you need to come visit. They're great. But not every child wants that or has medical needs or, you know, there's many reasons why students don't take the lunch. But they do go in line, they do take the entire lunch so that they can have the milk to go with their lunch at home. They go over, they dump, and it's increased our waste and our garbage, all the bills that go along with that. This House file does propose a targeted investment to fund free milk for students, which is important, and it ensures that it is an essential source of nutrition for our kids. I strongly support this bill, It's practical, it's forward-thinking solution, and it benefits our schools and our taxpayers alike. Representative Allen did have me go into the lunchroom and just see how many kids were packing their lunches. I went in one random day. This is not scientific. 60 students out of 654 kids packed a lunch. That's not many. But when you take 60 lunches times 174 school days, that's 10,440 meals that truthfully, besides the milk, went into the garbage. And so I would like you to consider this bill. I think it's smart. Thank you.
And with that, Representative Allen, I see you have Representative Hicks up there as well. Did you want to make a quick comment? Otherwise, I'd like to bring MDE up and go over the fiscal note.
Yes, thank you, committee and chairs. This is a bill that I was passionate about last cycle, and so partnering with my colleague across the aisle to try to see if we can get it done this cycle.
Very good. So thank you for that. I'm going to have the testifier step aside. I'm going to ask the Minnesota Department of Education if you'd come up. And while you're doing that, Mr. Strom, if you'd go over the fiscal note with us quickly, that'd be great. Or Ms. Beckel, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. The fiscal note in your packets has a cover page, page one, but if you turn to page two, it provides a little more detail. The total costs for the fiscal year 26 and 27 biennium per the fiscal note come in at $9.297 million. And then for the fiscal year 28-29 biennium, come in at $9.217 million. In order to cost out this bill, the Minnesota Department of Education made a number of assumptions. So they do provide a short bill description underneath that table on page two, and then they go down to their assumptions. They use daily attendance data, and then they make an assumption that about 25% of students who decide not to take a no-cost school lunch will take one free milk per day. And then they go into a variety of other numbers and assumptions about students and their milk-taking proclivities.
Greatest quote of the day.
And what they conclude is that 54,501 students will take a milk each day, and then they use the reimbursement rate at the federal level of 50 cents per day for a half pint of milk, recognizing, of course, that federal reimbursement rate could change over time. So those are some of the assumptions that go into the bill, which are a little different than the assumptions that Representative Allen went over. So it's hard to make assumptions about this sort of thing particularly when you're talking about child behavior. It's the funniest fiscal note I've ever presented.
believe me, that yes, the questions kick around up here.
So then if you flip to page three, they continue a bit with the assumptions, and then they provide a really good table that breaks down their costs and their reasoning. So the paragraph at the top explains that in their CLICS system, so their cyber-linked interactive child nutrition system, basically the system that connects to the point of service, would need to have some upgrades to include the option to just provide that free milk. So they're saying that there will be some IT costs to this bill. And then we come down to that big chart here that just explains, here's the estimated number of pupils, the estimated number of school days, and then they do the math to come down to the total cost for free milk, which is on line nine. So they have that at 1 million, basically. But that was just for, if you take a look at line two, September and October. So that was for about 41 days. So, of course, they need to spread that out over the whole school year. So they take that and multiply it by four, effectively. No, excuse me.
Sorry. They, where am I? I'm so sorry, everyone.
That's okay.
Anyway, you can follow the math. MDE provides all the lines explaining where they got it from. And then they do provide a subtraction on line 12 of that table, showing that they are doing a reduction for those lunches that the students will not be taking now that they can just get a free milk. And then finally, oh, here we go. So line 15, the net total cost for free milk times or plus line 14, that negative to get the total cost for the free milk. And then the little table at the bottom includes the minute costs, and then MDE also believes they will need an FTE to administer these changes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. if the Minnesota Department of Education, if you could introduce yourself, so I make sure I want to make sure I pronounce your name right, and then if you just want to go over the fiscal note briefly, that'd be great, or if you have comments to it.
Sami Rajad, Assistant Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. Thank you, Solveig, for kind of running through that fiscal note. I think, as was mentioned, there's a number of assumptions in the beginning half of that. I'd be happy to kind of connect with program staff to get some more clarity on any specific questions that committee members might have on it. From my understanding, is we took an estimate of 25% of students that bring a cold lunch would take milk when going to school. And we're taking the number of students that are not currently taking Minnesota free school meals, then applying that to the attendance factor of 91.25% and use that number of students to determine who we believe are the students who are bringing a cold lunch from home. And then there's a number of different ways the program staff have kind of developed these assumptions throughout the entire fiscal note. So if there are specific questions to it, I'd be happy to kind of bring that back to them.
So, and we do have limited time, and I know there's a number of questions. So let me just throw this out. As I look at this, and frankly, this is the reason that as elected officials, we go back to our districts and we get all kinds of questions. I'm just trying to figure out why a kid at a lunchroom who brought their own lunch can say, hey, can I just get a milk? And there isn't a carton of milk handed to that kid, and this is never talked about again. But we suddenly have a bill in front of us with an FTE and minute involved and a $9 million fiscal note. And I don't understand how a little wink, wink, nod, nod, nudge, nudge, here's a glass of milk, or here's a carton of milk, doesn't just happen. So I'm really struggling to, Representative Allen, Representative Hicks, thanks for bringing this up. I'm not trying to make this into the theater of the absurd, but I am just wondering why. We have a superintendent who took their time away from the day to come here, and I just don't really understand why this is something that has kicked all the way back up to us. So. With that, maybe someone can help me. Maybe MDE with the superintendent can walk outside and a little scratch on the back of the note on a napkin saying, hey, just give the kid some milk would solve this. But that's where I'm at, honestly. Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when this came up last year, I had been subbing in the schools. So I asked all three different districts if this was a problem, and all three of them had figured out a way to do it. We have sharing tables in elementary, middle school, high school. Kids put their milks on there. They put apple, oranges, extra things they don't want, cheese, little fruit cups. There's always something for somebody to grab. This may happen on a random Friday when there's chocolate milk, but it's not like kids are clamoring when they bring their lunch from home. So all of my districts had managed a way to figure this out. So I'd hate to spend $9 million taking care of this, just saying.
And I'm going to come back to you, Superintendent Geese. Then I have a member question. So help us understand there's obviously something you're looking for here. Superintendent Geese.
I absolutely love what you said. I wish we could do that. If you have contracted services, if you do not use in-house food service, they will not allow it. We have a sharing table. It's very well used. Some kids get a second milk. Some kids like an extra apple. All of the things. It's the sharing table absolutely works. It doesn't work for every kid. I've got 60 kids out of 654 bring their lunch. I wish I could walk in and say, yes, just go grab a milk. Tahir is the company that we use. They do not allow it. The reimbursable lunch needs to be the entire lunch. There has to be a fruit. There has to be a vegetable. There has to be a protein. They have all these rules. They will not budge on it. So I'm glad to hear that there's some school districts that are making that happen. I'm with you. I think that would be great. The law very clearly says to be a reimbursable lunch, it has to have those components. So unfortunately, every school district's watching every penny. I'm going to do what I can to get my reimbursable. I don't think there's going to be that much cost to just have kids go up and grab just a milk. Maybe it is just a language change. I'm not sure. I understand exactly where you're coming from because that's where I'm at too. Why can they not just walk up and get a milk? This seems silly. It's the reimbursable process.
And so with that, thank you, Superintendent Geese. And I'm not trying to minimize you by you're here for a reason. Yep. And if there's a language change, we need to find that out. Representative Allen, I'm going to come back to you in a minute. I have some members that are starting to get on the list. So Representative Quam, you're the first one on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And having had extensive database and software experience, I'm shocked that it couldn't be done in part of a day. And needing an FTE to, for a year. I mean, I think it's overblown. The common sense would be an allowable, which some school districts apparently are initiating, but others have problems. So it's not going to cost anything if we allow this option. It shouldn't cost anything. And if they have to do the software, again, it should be part of a day to initiate. It's done. It boggles the mind how, $9 million or six or whatever it is for something very simple and straightforward and logical. So I really hope this is included in our bill, and I hope we can vote for it on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Quam. And I should have said this, Superintendent Geese, my apologies, because something that came through this up here has created this for you, and we're going to try to get around that. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. I know that St. Paul Public School offers a lactose free milk, but how many other school districts offer lactose free milk? I'm curious to know if that, I just, because my child has a problem with high tolerance of lactose, so I know that she has the option of whether she wants to choose the milk or not, and there's a substitute, but how many other school districts offer that?
All schools should have that offered to
Superintendent
them.
Geese?
Sorry.
That's okay.
I apologize. All school districts have that option for students. Parents let us know at the beginning of the year, and all students are provided that opportunity.
Very good. Okay, follow up, Representative Perez Vega.
So is it? I assume it's pre-ordered, right? Parents, it's pre-ordered through the school districts per school.
Superintendent Geese.
That's correct.
Okay. Do we know what like the
Representative Perez Vega? You're fine.
You're I'm so close to you. Today.
You're doing great. You're doing
like
great.
We're at the lunchroom. So to say, is what's the cost difference for that as well? Like, do we understand the fiscal note for like the non-traditional whole milk versus like a lactose, or I assume it's lactose and not almond because that would be an allergy issue in the schools.
So to Representative Perez Vega's question, Mr. Strom, would you have that, or to MDE, maybe we could just get follow-up information? Would that suffice?
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you.
Yep.
Representative Altendorf. And then we'll go to close, and we'll move this. So, Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Allen, for bringing this bill. And my questions are for MDE, if they could.
Okay. Representative Altendorf, if MDE could come up. Why don't you go ahead with your question?
Yeah, I have a couple different questions. So, first of all, can you explain to the committee why there's a new full-time employee posted for this implementing of the milk.
And clarification, not posted yet, but part of fiscal note, right?
Right.
Is that your question? Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, and I can double check with the program staff, but from my understanding is it was not included in last year's fiscal note for this, but it should have been at that point in time, and after reevaluating, we recognize that. This is with implementing that new program and these technology costs that would go into implementing this new statute. So I think that's where those that FTE comes from, but I can always double check with program staff.
Representative Altendorf.
Okay, Mr. Chair, and another question. So when we went through the free lunch 2 years ago, what percentage of the students did you, on your fiscal note, did you determine would receive that?
From last year's fiscal note, I have to just go back and double check for that one.
Okay, Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my point is, I believe when we had the universal school lunches, when they went through the fiscal note, it didn't increase. It didn't take into account that more people were going to be receiving the free lunches. And now, what I just heard you testify today, basically, we are trying to do something to reduce waste. We have representatives here. I'm from Southeast Minnesota as well. This is a real problem in the state of Minnesota. This is a real problem. So I don't know if it's a difference. Some of the metro schools are not hearing this, but I hear this all the time about the amount of waste of food that's going into the garbage. And so this fiscal note is very confusing to a lot of us in math, that if the child is not taking a $4 lunch, and instead just taking a 50-cent milk, there should actually be a cost savings. And I just want MDE to understand that that's, I mean, pretty well understood by the rest of us.
To the MDE, did you want to respond?
No, but I know there's a few questions that I wasn't able to specifically address, so I will connect with the program staff for you and try to get those responses to the committee as soon as possible.
Thank you. Representative Bakeberg, Ingham, and then I'll go to close.
So,
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on your comment that you made about the fiscal note, because I have lots of questions. But you said the need, and correct me if I misheard this, but you said the need for the additional 1.0 FTE is because you realized it in the previous year, so you put it into this fiscal note. Did I hear that correctly?
So, yes. So in the fiscal note from last session, we did not include an FTE when drafting that fiscal note. When reevaluating, looking at this legislation similar to last year's, we recognized that it did require an FTE and it should have been included in last year's fiscal note.
Representative Bakeberg.
So for the last year, you've just absorbed that cost?
To MDE.
I don't believe the legislation was passed last session.
Oh, so. Yeah. You're good. Okay, so you're saying from this bill's fiscal note last
Correct.
Session.
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. So, okay. My concern is that, so thank you for the clarity. You were going off of this bill's last fiscal note, because I would hate for MDE to slide in additional FTEs, we all know something called death by fiscal note. When something doesn't want to really get done, then we just inflate the cost. This is a common sense bill. So I really appreciate the superintendent bringing up the contracted services. That's something that I hadn't thought of. So the districts that contract their services for food, for breakfast and lunch, I understand why that company would not just give a milk. In one of the districts that I serve, we have bulk milk. And similar to what Chair Joachim talked about, you know what we do when the kid wants a milk? We just tell him to go take a milk. All right? But we have created this government program overreach that we have to micromanage everything. And we have superintendents coming and just saying, I just want the kid to have a milk. Like, seriously. This is the stuff to what Representative Chair Kresha talked about. This is what is frustrating to to educators, frankly, just normal people, about when we as government get in the way of people solving problems.
Members, I'm going to do us a favor. Because I understand, we have frustrations here. I think there's a way forward. We're going to have to talk through this. Sometimes things are better handled with conversations versus legislation. Okay, I'll be quick. Representative Ingen, Ray Rauer, and then Chair Joachim. But I don't want us to get too far down the path of our frustrations when I understand that, because we do have three bills, but I want to give an opportunity to solve this. So Representative Ingen, and then Ray Rauer, and then Chair Joachim. Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Chair Krisha. I won't belabor the point, but I think what we're talking about is just how much this highlights the absurdity of some of the asks of MDE. 157 consultant threes were found on the list of full-time employees when we ran through that a couple of weeks ago. And when we asked what in the heck they are, we were never given an answer. And maybe there's another consultant three that is going to be this milkman at $147,000 salary. Just to distribute a milk, you need a full-time employee. We have 35-year record highs in teacher layoffs. You had 50 new full-time employees in 23 and 24. Just thinking about this and how illogical it is, it kind of made me think of a bill idea. Maybe we should start asking school districts what their user experience is with MDE. Because when I'm talking with my superintendents and my school board members, they're saying they can't get a hold of folks because they're still working remotely and it's cumbersome. But you guys are asking for another full-time employee to oversee milk? This is absurd. Absolutely absurd.
Representative Ray Rauer.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to find out if there is a way to see if the difference is in-house nutrition staff versus contracted out services. So I have had lots of negative feedback about Tahir. I believe it is a for-profit company, so that makes sense that they're charging the 50 cents for the milk because they want to charge if you're making profit. So I would like to hear if it's a difference between those two things, and it's our in-house nutrition staff and that are able to then just, you know, give the kid a carton of milk. Thank you.
So is that just a comment, Representative Rivera?
Well, it's a question I'd love the answer to. I don't know how to get the answer, though.
I don't know either. I'll leave it there. I'm going to leave that on the testimony. So before I go, a quick closing. Chair Joachim, if you have a quick comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand all that's going on in this bill, and I had not realized the contract services. But we know that Universal Meals is feeding kids. We know that there's districts that are figuring this out. But we also know because of Universal Meals, your fund balances are starting to increase, and I think that's really where we need to look when it comes to this, is to try to figure out the flexibility for you to transfer fund balances and maybe buy some more milk or fix a sewer line in your kitchen, or we added the tables last year. So I'd like to see our energy kind of focused on that together, on how we can look at those fund balances and give you guys some flexibility there. But I do appreciate you bringing this up. And, of course, as you see, it spurred a lot of conversation. So thank you.
So my quick comments before Representative Allen, why don't you go ahead and your closing comments, and I'll close out and we'll move on.
It's of all the bills I've brought forward, I've brought very limited ones, but this one has struck probably the most visceral chord with families and parents. School board members, teachers, superintendents across the board, it's just amazing that the whole entire lunch program hinges on something as simple as a carton of milk, and that we can find some cost savings by going to a program like this. I did consider looking. I appreciated Co-Chair Joachim's comments about the nutrition fund balance, but looking at that a little bit more carefully, I think it goes to a bigger story and a bigger issue that we find within government is the we maybe put guardrails on too tight, especially around schools, in terms of where funding ends up going. We need to be able to give them the ability to use that program either to focus on upgrades within kitchens and whatnot. And if we did end up shifting over milk over into that, we might deplete that fund, ultimately shorting schools with the ability to be able to actually do the necessary upgrades, if it's whether sewer lines, water, electrical system, whatever it may be, ventilation, in order to be able to do it. So I'm afraid we'd be robbing Peter to pay Paul in this process. But you can hear this has struck a big chord with people. I really, truly appreciate the committee's thought into this particular bill and how bipartisan it's been. It has been a very, very, very fun bill to work on, and it's nice to see it proceeding over on the Senate side as well. So thank you.
So with that, before I renew my motion, just a couple closing comments. Thank you, Representative Allen. And I agree with my co-chair, Chair Joaquin. We should be able to find some flexibility here. We have fund balances. We should be able to do this. I'm going to say this, and I don't mean this to be mean-spirited at all, but you're the messenger. It is co-equal branches. We have a legislative branch and executive branch. But if I have any say in how this gets the bill, there will be a language change. There won't be an FTE. There won't be any money for MDE. How could we trust the fiscal note the last time if this one has changed? And I look at this and go, my goodness, you come up with a program, you hand it to the schools, you don't need a full-time employee to manage this throughout the year. The schools are doing it. So if you want to take that back to MD, please do that as the chair of the Education Finance. You will not get money for this. We'll find a language change if I can, but that fiscal note just makes no sense and is very frustrating to us. With that, the chair renews the motion for House File 2387, and that'll be laid over for possible inclusion at a later date or further consideration. Representative Green, would you bring our temperature down with your new bill? And thank you to the MDE. I think we just need to work through this and the superintendents. So thank you. Representative Green, your bill is up, House File 2016. And you are a member of the committee. Would you like to, well, I'll just do it this way. Representative Green moves House File 2016 in front of the committee with the chair's intent to lay the bill over for a possible inclusion at a later date or a future omnibus bill. Representative Green, to your bill, House File 2016.
Thank you so much, Chair Kreshaw. And not to bring up the last conversation, but I did start my career on the Got Milk campaign back in the 90s. And so there are a lot of farmers and processors across the country happy that we're referring to a bill as Got Milk. So I just had to give a shout out to that. Anyway, but I really appreciate Chair Kreshaw for you signing on to House File 2016. And thank you, Chair Joaquim and members for giving this a good listen. So House File 2016 would extend safety aid, which is currently only available to traditional public schools, and it would make it available to students at chartered public schools. Chartered public schools have been excluded because it is a levy aid, but their safety needs are just as important. So much like traditional public schools, chartered public schools need funds to contract with the same needs and the same services: police liaison services, protection from cybersecurity attacks, addressing drug and chemical dependency issues, mental health, and much more. The legislature recognized the needs for leaders to address safety in a holistic way by creating a robust list of eligible uses, and you can see that in your materials, members. But regardless of what public school a student attends, safety is paramount. I don't think anyone in this room would disagree with that. And with that, I'm going to just turn it over to our testifiers to share more in their expertise and perspective. So,
very good. Thank you, Representative Green. And to the Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools, state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Kreshaw, Chair Kreshaw. My name is Joey Chenyon, and I'm the Executive Director from the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Thank you for this opportunity to speak today to you and to all of the members of the committee. There is currently 173 chartered public schools operating in Minnesota, serving about 70,000 students. That's about 8% of the statewide total of students in public schools. Chartered public schools are tuition-free, independent public schools that welcome all students regardless of ability or need. They are governed and operated by licensed teachers, parents, and community members. Charter schools enroll about 60% students of color and American Indian students, 60% students who qualify for free and reduced lunch, and 22% are English language learners. In recent years, as you all know, school safety has become a pressing concern, both nationally and right here in Minnesota. From community violence and firearm issues to gaps in school resource officer coverage and cybersecurity attacks on some of our largest districts, the challenges are growing and complex. Safety is top of mind for every parent dropping their child off at school, for students who may feel distracted or anxious instead of focused on learning, and for the teachers and staff who care deeply about their students' well-being. Minnesota's charter public schools are rising to meet these modern challenges. They're doing everything they can to create safe, secure, and welcoming environments for their students. But right now, these significant costs associated with school safety are being pulled directly from the classroom budgets, shortchanging the very students we're trying to protect. Our chartered public schools deserve better. As the representative said, traditional school districts receive through local levies safe school funding of about $36 per pupil to use on safety expenditures. Chartered public school students are excluded from ongoing school safety funding because it comes through a local levy and they cannot receive levy funds. All of Minnesota's public school students, including the 70,000 plus students who attend chartered public schools, deserve equal resources for safe school environments. Why are chartered public school students not eligible for school safety aid? We know budgets are tight and these are challenging times. We really appreciate that. But why should charter school students continue to wait for this funding? We respectfully request the legislature fix this unequal funding situation around school safety and provide equitable per pupil state school safety funding for chartered public school students at the same amount traditional public school students receive. This would be at an estimated cost of about $2.5 million as we have 70,000 students and it's 36 bucks a kid. We sincerely appreciate Representative Green's proposed legislation and this committee's work. Thank you, co-chairs and members, and we look forward to hear the testimony from some of our school leaders who can talk to you about their experience directly.
Thank you very much. Mr. Simmons, if you could come up, and then we'll have two remote testifiers. And just give everyone a bit of a warning, 2:10 is my proposed time to close this one up. We have two more bills, but you're doing great. Mr. Simmons, if you'd state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Tony Simmons, and I'm the executive director at the High School for Recording Arts. I would like to address the matter of funding for school safety. High School for Recording Arts has existed for over 27 years. We are a public charter school founded to meet the critical needs within our community, to re-engage young people who have been marginalized, pushed, or kicked out of traditional education settings. Most of our students reside within the St. Paul community and are predominantly African-American males. These students have often been out of school for a year and a half. We re-engage them back into school through their interest in music, recording, and exploration of the recording industry. This passion becomes the driving force behind their learning. We have been recognized globally for our work in engaging and transforming these young people. When we ask our students why they come to our school, one of the primary reasons they cite is that they feel safe. Unfortunately, many of our students live in communities plagued by violence, facing incredibly challenging circumstances. The simple act of feeling safe anywhere, but especially in school, is paramount. Despite navigating paths to school that oftentimes don't feel safe, they choose to come to our school. And when they do, they express that our school is a place where they feel secure, seen, and heard. We take this responsibility to keep our students, their families, our staff, and our community guests safe very seriously. All our applicable funding has been directly applied to ensure their safety. I would like to emphasize that the state of Minnesota is receiving a significant return on its investment in our school. We have been cited for disrupting the school-to-prison pipeline. The socioeconomic impact of re-engaging young people who may have been out of school yet have a right to a free and public education until the age of 21 and providing them with the opportunity to earn a high school diploma as opposed to them leaving school without one represents a substantial economic benefit for the citizens of Minnesota. Therefore, we implore you to recognize our students as public school students deserving of the same degree of safety investment as any other public school student in the state. And please recognize how this investment in their school safety serves a vital public purpose. These young people deserve to attend a school where they feel safe and know that the state is investing in their safety and education, just as it does for any other public school student. This is a sound investment by the state of Minnesota in their safety and their future. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. With that, I have Leah Jones remote and Carrie Bakken. Let's go to Leah Jones first.
Thank you.
My name is Leah Jones, and I am the executive director at Life Prep School in St. Paul. We serve pre-K through sixth grade, and I have been at Life Prep for 19 years, first as teacher and now for the last 8 years as director. The location of my school poses a large number of safety concerns. We have seen a huge increase in criminal activity right outside our building and often on school grounds. I have also seen an increase in student behavior that is also a threat to our safety. On one occasion, it was necessary for me to close school in order to completely address the situation. I had always known that my school is nowhere near equipped to handle today's safety issues, but it wasn't until the day that we closed that I was so cruelly slapped in the face with the reality of what education is like today. You see, the reality is that I and my staff are all my students have when it comes to protection. The reality is that my morning starts off like most, but when I get ready in the morning, I have to consider my wardrobe options a bit more carefully. You see, I need at least three pockets. I need one for my cell phone. I need one for my pepper spray. And my work cell is for calling 911 if I am in a violent situation. And my personal cell is to call my husband while I wait for help. I need to carefully consider my footwear. Tennis shoes are my best choice. If I have to run, I have to be fast. I can't slip because every second counts, and I know that I am most likely to die while fumbling with my keys while trying to unlock a door. Funding is my biggest challenge. My students deserve and need a safe space in the event of extreme violence. The multiple layers of protection presented in this bill provide the protection that my students need. Today, you have the ability to make it possible with your support of the SHIELD Act. You have the ability to help us make our schools safe for everyone. Today, I ask you to be part of the solution and make school safety a top priority in Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony and thank you for your comments and the stories. The next testifier is Carrie Bakken.
Hello, thank you so much for having me today. My name is Carrie Bakken and I'm from Avalon School and I'm the executive director. I've been at Avalon since 2001 and the reason I stay is because of what it does for our students. So we have a nationally recognized student-centered model that supports students with disabilities. We support 50% of our students with disabilities and they have all come to our school out of a need in a small learning environment. And many of those needs were not met in a large traditional district. So charter schools serve an important need in our community, and they are just one of the many essential pieces of fabric of our public education system. I've been so grateful for your commitment to funding charters over this time. I've been in charter schools since 2001. And I guess that's why I'm confused why we wouldn't want to take something so essential like safety aid and extend it to charters. Some of the work that we were able to do with ESSER funds when we did get school safety aid was we were able to train all of our staff with really fantastic mental health training to support our students. We did building upgrades with that money. And now, understanding that districts still have access to that money and we do not is a little bit confusing. So I think we can all agree as adults that our students are still impacted and they still are feeling the strong effects of the pandemic, and the anxiety and the depression and the mental health is something that all schools need to continue to address. It shows up in our population probably more because of our high population of students with disabilities. And if we could access that funding again, I can promise you, I love the two-pronged approach of the funding, which is to address student well-being and mental health, but then to also do the safety upgrades that we continuously need as a school in St. Paul as well. So I know there's a lot of needs right now, and I understand that we can't have everything, but having parity to support all of our students funding equally in this small way would go a long ways for our school. So thank you so much for listening to our concerns, and please consider extending school safety to charter schools.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, I do have one member before I go to close, Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Green. It's no secret this is a passion of mine, and this is common sense. I don't know why charters were left out of this funding in the first place, but regardless, let's keep working on this issue. I think that there's a real opportunity for bipartisan work because it's, I think everybody's addressing the elephant in the room, that our schools are exposed right now, and they're scared. And I first met one of your testifiers, Leah Jones, about a year and a half ago, and she shared that story with me about how she goes to work every day and has to think about what her tennis shoes are and how she might have to run for a door or for the baseball bat in the corner of the room to defend herself and her kids. Like, that's sad, and we shouldn't be allowing that anymore. So thank you so much for bringing this bill forward, and look forward to signing on.
Thank you, Representative Ingen. Representative Joachim, Chair Joachim. Representative Green, closing comments.
Thank you all, members, for giving this a good listen. I think our school leaders really captured it well, the need for this. You know, we talk a lot about safety with students, and, you know, as much all the curriculum, all the other things that we do really don't matter if they don't feel safe and free and a sense of belonging and a sense of inclusion, and all of this stuff is connected. And so I really appreciate the time here today and really hope that House File 2016 continues on. So thank you,
Representative Green. I think, members, we continue to hear more and more perspectives. I love hearing these different stories. We don't always get a chance to do that. So thank you, Representative Green, for bringing your bill up. And with that, Representative Green renews her motion to lay House File 2060 over for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Members, I'm going to do a swap on the last bills. Representative Bennett, I'm going to have you come up, and then we'll go to Representative Bakeberg. Yeah, we did lay it over. I think I said lay it over. Yeah. Thank you. Representative Bennett, would you like to bring the bill in front of us and the chair's intent to lay the bill over for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and so moved. I'm not sure the exact words you want me to say, but you go ahead and say them.
Representative Bennett moves the bill in front of us, and the chair's intent is to lay this over for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Representative Bennett, to your bill.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. First time I've logged people to put words in my mouth, right? So, I am going to actually say very little here. I'm going to allow my testifier to explain the issue, but we have wonderful ALCs and co-ops throughout our state, and there is a bit of a funding glitch that's happening that is not allowing them to get the full amount of money passing through schools, the 100%, if that student is with them 100% of the time. So, if you're okay, Mr. Chair, we'll let my testifier explain the issue.
Very good. So, Chair Bennett, to your testifier, and if you'll state your name for your record and begin your testimony.
Dan Armagas. Good afternoon, committee. I'm Dan Armagas, Executive Director of the Southern Minnesota Education Consortium, a cooperative with 7-member districts that provides specialized programming to unique learners. Our specialized program includes running an alternative learning center that we started in 2016. We have been very successful at running this program and have helped many amazing students graduate. The ALC is without a doubt one of my favorite programs. At our ALC, we focus on building positive relationships with our students, helping them develop a sense of belonging, supporting mental health and chemical dependency needs, removing barriers to their attendance, and tailoring their coursework towards their goals after graduation. This spring, we will have 31 students graduating, a number larger than most of our member districts. ALCs are considered a graduation incentive program. Students do not have to be a member of that district or cooperative unit to enroll into ALC, but must qualify due to risk factors such as they're behind their peers academically, their parents are pregnant,
are chemical dependent, have been excluded or expelled from their previous schools, have been victims of abuse, are experiencing mental health problems, are experiencing homelessness, or have been chronically truant. Most of our students also qualify for the free and reduced lunch program, and all of them come to us because typical school structure did not work for them. With House File 2534, we are not asking for additional funding. We are asking for written clarification to the wording in Minnesota statute to ensure that the funding that has already been allocated makes it to the intended serving districts. Currently, there is no issues if it's a district-to-district relationship, meaning a student that is a resident of a district enrolls into an ALC run by another district. With a district-to-district relationship, 100% of the eligible funding flows directly to the serving entity. If you are an education district that was grandfathered in, the state flows 100% of the eligible funding directly to the serving entity. If you are a cooperative that has an assigned fiscal host, the state flows 100% of the eligible funding directly to the serving entity. For all special education students, the state flows 100% of the eligible funding directly to the serving entity, including cooperatives without a fiscal host. When a cooperatives do not have a fiscal host, 100% of the eligible funding does not flow directly to the serving entity, but it is sent to the student's resident district. Cooperatives must then invoice the resident districts, both members and non-members, to receive the revenue that was intended for the cooperative for every student they serve. Unfortunately, some districts are taking advantage of the fact that the cooperatives don't receive their revenue directly from the state and are trying to withhold 10% of the revenue for students they did not serve. If SMEC was to claim a district as a fiscal host, 100% of the funding would flow directly to the host district. There will be no means for the resident district to withhold 10% of the funding, again showing that the funding is not intended for the resident district, but for the serving cooperative. MDE has clarified that the amount to bill is typically determined by the serving district, not the resident district, and that the cooperative can bill the full tuition based on the what-if spreadsheet. This is also stated in the MARS reference guide, which states, student enrolled in a SAP must meet the graduation incentive statute criteria. However, a SAP is sponsored by a cooperative that does not have a fiscal host. The resident district will generate the state aid and receive a bill for 100% of the tuition. This all seems very clear as the intent of the funding, but it is called into question as you read the statute where it states, the resident district must pay tuition equal to at least 90% and no more than 100% of the district's average general education revenue per pupil unit minus, and then it goes through the funding we're not qualified for. I believe the decision on what to invoice the resident district belongs to the serving entities, not the districts being billed, and that the statute was intended to safeguard against districts billing over the generated amount of revenue and to ensure that at least 90% of the funds are restricted to the ALC. I ask you to support House File 2534 to provide clarity to where the funding is intended to go. There is very few schools that are affected by this, but the intent of the law is clear as you read the MDE MARS funding guide and look at how the funding flows given other relationships where the students are served outside the resident district. House File 2534 will fix the confusion and will ensure that 100% of the eligible funds make it to the serving entity. My preference is to have the funding flow directly to the serving entity, but until that goal is achieved, clarification in the statute is needed. This bill strikes the 90% language to ensure that 100% of eligible funding flows through to the serving entity, matching what is currently printed in the MDE MARS reference guide and is what the state has done when they are the ones flowing the funds to district. This change is simply making sure that the funding is going to the serving entity and not allowing a district to take advantage of the fact that the money flows through them. I don't think it is right to assume that we can educate students with the greatest needs and the highest risk of dropping out for less than it takes to educate their typical peers. Again, this does not change the amount of funding, but it just does clarify the language so the funding reaches the intended entities and is serving the students that have generated it. Thank you.
And to the testifier, could you state your last name again?
Armagost, A-R-M-A-G-O-S-T.
Wanted to make sure. Mr. Armagost, just a question. So have you had conversations already with the school district as to why the withhold is there? I mean, before we get involved, I want to see if those conversations have all been exercised.
Yes, we've had conversations with districts on why they're withholding funds, and basically it comes back to this statute. The statute is leading them to believe that even though they haven't served the students, that they are entitled to 90% of that revenue based on the language that's currently in the law.
So, Mr. Armagost, what they're falling back on is the letter of the law, and that's what they're going to, but there hasn't been any other movements on conversations with that?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Member question, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just make one comment. And this bill is not intended to fix just a single issue here. This is happening in some other areas throughout the state after speaking with House Research. So it is a small problem. I don't think a lot of districts are doing this, but some are, not just in this particular case.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Bennett. Member questions? If not, Chair Joachim, any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bennett, for bringing this forward. It sounds like an issue that needs to be fixed, and I just want to thank Ms. Superintendent Armagost for working in an ALC. I know it is definitely a unique environment that is enriching for a lot of the students, but can be tough, so just thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the efficient testimony. Thank you, Representative Bennett. Any closing comments before we move on?
Just thank you for hearing the bill, and I'll echo what Chair Joachim said. Our ALCs do amazing work. I visited this particular one. It's not actually right in my district. It's in Representative Mueller's district, but they do wonderful work, and we thank all of them throughout the state. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. House File 2534 is laid over for possible inclusion into a future omnibus bill or consideration. With that, Representative Bakeberg, you can close us out with House File 2388. Representative Bakeberg moves House File 2388 in front of the committee with the chair's intent to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration. Representative Bakeberg, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Ben Bakeberg. I have the privilege to represent. I got sidetracked by the baby. So I have the privilege to represent communities of Prior Lake, Jordan, Shakopee, and the surrounding townships. Local option revenue was first enacted to provide general ed revenue or general ed funding that would supplement the formula funding. It's called local option because schools can opt out of the levy that generates this revenue, but in reality, the majority of school districts opt in to the equalized state aid and the levy to reach that $724 cap for allowable uses. So currently there are two tiers of the local option revenue with a mix of state aid and local levy broken into those tiers. However, this funding is also focused primarily on traditional school districts and largely excludes charter schools as they do not have tax levy. House File 2388 renames this program Basic Supplemental Revenue and adds a new first tier providing $100 in state aid per pupil to all public schools and charter schools in Minnesota. There should be a district run in your packet so you can see, but the cost of this bill is about $92 million. So, Mr. Chair, I'd move that we move to public testifiers just for the sake of time.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. And I have one testifier on the list. And if the testifier, state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Chair Kreisha and members of the committee. My name is Joey Chenyon. I'm the Executive Director at the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Before I share more detailed testimony, I want to express support for HF 2388 as a good step forward and thank Representative Bakeberg for including charter public schools. Local optional revenue levies are board-approved funding streams that do not need voter approval. And as a result, this has become a consistent and essential part of traditional public school budgets. Charter public schools cannot levy, And therefore, as it currently stands, they miss out on local optional revenue, which is $724 per pupil that charter public school students do not receive, along with other levies. Charter public schools currently receive significantly less funding than traditional districts receive, and as many of the costs of educating students have increased, it only makes sense that there would be proposed legislation seeking to offset these rising costs. However, simply raising LOR funding would widen the inequities between traditional district schools and chartered public schools. We appreciate that this bill takes this dynamic into consideration and includes chartered public schools in the supplemental aid portion at $100 per pupil. While it isn't the full amount, it's an essential step in the right direction towards addressing the funding inequities that exist between the different types of public schools in our states, in our state. Chartered public schools, like traditional districts, are seeing rising costs, but are unable to access many funding streams available to traditional districts. This forces chartered public schools to take difficult decisions and ultimately takes funding out of the classroom and away from students. Any discussions like increasing LOR or local optional revenue or supplemental aid should, like HF 2388 does, include solutions that address charter funding inequities that stem from being excluded from levies like local optional revenue. We support HF 2388 as a step in the right direction and respectfully request that you include chartered public schools in any increase to the local optional revenue or supplemental aid funding stream. We sincerely appreciate Representative Bakeberg's proposed legislation and this committee's work. Thank you, co-chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Chenian, for your testimony. Any other testifiers, Representative Bakeberg? Yeah, with that, let's go to member questions. We have 17 minutes to kill, Representative Bakeberg. With that, if there's no member questions, Representative Bakeberg, your final comments before we lay the bill over.
So I have a 17-minute close. Chair, Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry. Oh. My apologies. You should say something to bail me out.
Thank you, Chair Crescia. This is an issue. I mean, I've carried a bill for 3 years on LOR and collapsing the tiers and rebasing the market rate and for equalization. Representative Ray Rauer has that same bill right now. So it's a larger problem. This is a piece of it. But thank you for starting the discussion again. We'll just keep having to have it until we fix it.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Co-Chair Joachim, as well. I think just to close, every dollar that we add to LOR to the new basic supplemental revenue is an additional dollar that goes into the classroom, into our schools. Just for context, if we invest this $100 into a school district with 1,600 students, that's $160,000. That equates out to about two teachers or four paraprofessionals. I think it's important that we understand what we're actually doing and the real life impact. If a district of 8,000 students, that's about $800,000, about 10 teachers, or about 20 paraprofessionals. And we've heard pretty consistently that districts are struggling financially, and this is a way that we can help address that. House File 2238 provides funding and flexibilities to our school districts that they are desperately asking for. As we move forward, prioritizing funding for our schools, this type of direct and flexible funding is exactly what we should be focused on. Thank you.
And with that, members, House File 2388 is laid over for possible inclusion or further consideration in a later bill. Representative Joachim, Chair Joachim, did you want to give in a preview? You have the gavel for Thursday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are going to be hearing, we've already heard the governor's budget bill, thanks to Representative Crescia, but we'll be hearing some of their adjustments. And then we're also hearing a bill from Representative Clardy about the READ Act. And then MDE also talking about the READ Act implementation.
Are you sure MDE wants to come back? And with that, members, education policy stands adjourned until our education finance stands adjourned until Thursday.
What date is that?
27th. The 27th at 1 o'clock. All right. Yeah, 1 o'clock.